Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on contract penalty clauses when we come back. You know, in Job 38, verse 24, we read a scientific question. It says, by what way is it that the light is parted? Or if we paraphrased it, it would say, by what way or technique is the light apportioned or separated? Imagine asking that question 4,000 years ago. Today, of course, it's a simple question, and a student simply answers by passing it through the prism of the spectroscope. But who could have known that 4,000 years ago in Job's day? And since it's manifestly impossible for any human mind to frame a question that the mind knows nothing of, then a greater mind than Job is the questioner here. Now, when we heat a metal red hot and we heat a substance until it's incandescent, it gives forth rays of light. These rays of light, after passing through the prism of the spectroscope, divide themselves on the graph according to the content of the matter that sent them forth. So when a ray of light reaches us from some far-flung star, all we have to do is pass the ray of light through the spectroscope to see what the composition of that star is and the proportion of each of its ingredients. Now, this division of light rays is always constant, and it doesn't vary in the least particular. And in that way, we can always rely upon the results. Spectrographic analysis is an exact science, and this is the manner by which the light is apportioned. Now, that places you and I in a quandary here, because either Job knew this, or else a supernatural wisdom is being revealed here. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Bible. And it's one more of the many lessons that I teach here on the Mosaic Law School. Now, for more information, why don't you call and order the free General Law CD package. Remember, it's free of charge. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now and order yours. The number's 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of contract penalty clauses. Specifically, in Ezekiel chapter 18, it reveals quite a bit about the breach of contract. Breach of contract. A contract has two sides. It can have more than two sides, but there has to be at least two sides to a contract, otherwise you don't have a contract. We discovered that a contract has four elements. It has an offer with an acceptance, over time with consideration. So you got an offer, acceptance, time, and consideration. A contract doesn't have to have money involved to have a contract. And there are two types of contracts. One is a contract in which we have a meeting of the minds. The second is called an adhesion contract, in which it's an enforced contract. It's a contract that's forced upon you, whether you like it or not. It's, in short, a take-it-or-leave-it proposition. Take it or leave it. A driver's license is a contract. It's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. It's a take it or leave it contract. It's an adhesion contract. Now, when something is called a license, the dictionary tells us that that's not a contract. But a contract is an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration, so I'll leave it up to you to decide whether a license is a contract or not. just because somebody says that a black and white animal isn't a skunk and that it's a civet cat doesn't change its smell any, does it? All right, now we looked at Ezekiel chapter 18, which is explaining terms and conditions of the contract, that old covenant, remember, that's located in Exodus 19, verse 16 through Exodus 24, 8, that your preacher couldn't find with a road map at high noon. Now, you know where the contract is located, and Ezekiel 18 explained two vital things to us. That you are not responsible for your father's sins, and he's not responsible for yours. And this is the principle in law that we call strict liability. Strict liability is the exact opposite of insurance. Insurance is limited liability. Today, we practice limited liability, and we abhor strict liability. God requires strict liability. And we found two things here in Ezekiel 18. In verse 4, we found that souls can die. That's an opposite. You went to church in Sunday school, they told you that souls never die, that you have a soul, but it's immortal. And that soul lives forever. Your body dies, but your soul goes to heaven. Bible says, the soul that sins, it shall die. Souls die. So what's a soul? A living, breathing body is a soul. A cow is a soul. A human being is a soul. A fish is a soul. A soul is something that lives. It's alive, and it can die. Second thing we learned in verse 19 was that there's no inherited sin. So if you went to church and Sunday school, they told you that you have inherited sins from your fathers. Verse 19 tells you very plainly, yet you say, why does not the son bear the iniquity of the father? The answer is, when the son has done that which is lawful and right, and has kept all of my statutes and has done them, he shall surely live. Now, when you break the law, it could get you killed because there are some death penalties. There are 28 penalties for violation of the law of God. 28 things that can happen to you. Some of the things that can happen to you result in death. But by and large, you don't die because you eat pig. You don't die because you wear clothes with mixed fabrics. You don't die because you crossbreed your cattle. Those are laws, just like parking meters are attended by laws, but they don't require the death penalty. A lot of times people think that everything that goes on in the Bible requires the death penalty, and that's preposterous nonsense. Going on in Ezekiel 18, after having found out that the wicked father dies for his sins, and the wicked son dies for his sins, and the righteous son lives for his righteousness, and the righteous father lives for his righteousness. In verse 20, the soul that sinneth, it shall die. The son shall not bear the iniquity of the father, and neither shall the father bear the iniquity of the son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon him. But if the wicked shall turn from his sins that he has committed, and keep all of my statutes, and do that which is lawful and right, he shall surely live. He shall not die. All of his transgressions that he has committed, they shall not be mentioned unto him. In his righteousness that he hath done, he shall live. Have I any pleasure at all that the wicked should die, says the Eternal, and not that he should return from his ways and live? But when the righteous turns away from his righteousness, and he commits iniquity, and he does according to all of the abominations that the wicked man doeth, shall he live? Well, all of his righteousness that he has done shall not be mentioned, and in his trespass that he has trespassed, and in his sin that he has sinned, in them shall he die. All right, so now, talking about inherited sin, the fathers don't die for the sons don't die for the fathers. inherited sin is preposterous nonsense. It comes from paganism. And they teach it here in the West in Christian theology because Christianity is indeed paganism. Just point to anything in Christianity that you can cite from the Bible. Name one. Send me an email, would you? Name one thing that you do in your church that comes out of the Bible. I'd like to see it. I've been looking for a long time. In verse 25, yet you say the way of the eternal is not equal. God is unfair, you say. Well, hear now, O house of Israel, is not my way equal, and are not your ways unequal? When a righteous man turns away from his righteousness, and he commits iniquity, and he dies in them for his iniquity that he has done, again, when the wicked man turns away from his wickedness that he has committed, and doeth that which is lawful and right, he shall save his soul alive. Uh-oh. Remember, verse 27, you want to save your soul alive? You're like a man that's riding on the Titanic, and the ship is about to sink, and you're fearful. And religious people say, are you saved, brother? I always ask, well, saved from what? Didn't know I was in danger. Why, you're in danger of hellfire. Well, I agree. I am in danger of hellfire. But why am I in danger of hellfire? Well, because I've committed iniquity. I have breached the contract. That's why I'm in danger of hellfire. So Ezekiel 18 is very straightforward. You don't need an IQ of 160 to understand this. I mean, if your IQ is out around 75 or 80, you know, I think you can grasp this. It's no big deal. Now, a contract, remember, can be between parties that are unequal. In fact, most contracts are among parties that are unequal. This contract here in the Bible is between two unequal parties. You've got one guy that's got eternal life, and then you've got you, and then you've just got a limited staying power. You've got a limited lifespan, 70 years. And you've contracted with a guy that's got eternal life. Picture it this way. You go into Walmart and you start looking at the battery chargers. Now, you don't have a battery charger. And Walmart, on their shelves, they've got about 30. And you need a battery charger. And you see the battery charger is priced at $30. And you walk up to the clerk and you say, I'd like to buy a battery charger, but I think $30 is too much. I want to pay you $25. And the clerk looks at you and he says, well, you know, the price is $30 and there's the battery chargers. And if you want them, take them. And if you don't, why, there's the door. What we're dealing with here is two parties. You've made a tender offer. The other side has rejected your offer because they're superior to you. Superior. They're superior because they've got battery chargers and you don't. They're superior because he who has the gold, or in this case, he who has the battery charger, sets the price. And so you pay the $30 and you take your battery charger home, and now you're equal with Walmart. You're equal. Because Walmart has battery chargers, and you have a battery charger. You've got batteries that need charging, and you've got a battery charger to charge your batteries. One day you wake up and you say, well, gee, I'd like to have a second battery charger. Now you go back to Walmart and you say, I'd like to buy a battery charger. The guy says, there they are, and they're $30. And you say, well, I've already got a battery charger, and I really don't need one, but I'll tell you what, I'll give you $25 for it if you want to get rid of it. Now, let's assume that they've got an old model on the shelf, and they might want to get rid of it. It may or may not, never can tell. But in any event, it doesn't make any difference, because if they say no, it doesn't harm you any. You've still got a battery charger, and you can charge your batteries. Now, that's what we call an adhesion contract. When you've got a take-it-or-leave-it contract, or when we have a meeting of the minds. You go to a flea market, and the guy's got a battery charger sitting there on his table.
And he's got a price tag on it of $15, and you offer him $10. He'd probably take $10. He wants to sell it. There's a contract, an offer with an acceptance over time and with consideration. Once you've agreed to the terms and conditions, we're in business. Once the contract is fulfilled, the contract becomes null and void. The contract is now terminated. You've got the battery charger. The guy in the flea market's got the $10. Now, when our contract with God comes up, and we're dealing with our contract here, this contract runs forever. There's a time frame that's set in the contract by the terms of the contract. Your great-great-granddaddy agreed to the terms of the contract and the benefits that flowed from the contract inure to the heirs and assigns forever. You and I are heirs and assigns. Forever isn't up yet. The terms and conditions of the contract are still in full force and effect. And the terms and conditions of the contract are specific performance to the terms and conditions. Now, there are 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. They're organized into 133 titles or subjects of law, of which thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not commit adultery, and thou shalt not covet, are three of those conditions. And they're binding upon you and I today. And if we don't perform on the contract, then it triggers the penal clause. Penal clause. The penal clause comes in two forms. Form one, I'm going to take away from you all of your toys and benefits. And then, part two, if you won't be reformed by the loss of your benefits, then I'm going to do this to you in addition to that. I'm going to make life so miserable for you, you'll wish you hadn't been born. That's what my daddy told me. He said, I'll make you hurt so bad you'll wish you hadn't been born. He told me that a couple of times, and I didn't believe him, so I wanted to test it. And I did. I tested it. And he was close to right, but I never tested him to go all the way because he never had to beat me enough that he had to kill me. But, you know, he had to beat me enough to make me repent. And that's all we're dealing with here. A father whips his kid. He inflicts pain to get him to repent, to get him to change his ways. All right, in Ezekiel 18, verse 25, yet you say the way of the eternal is not equal. Hear now, house of Israel, is not my way equal, and are not your ways unequal? Got that? Is God unfair? Is this contract unequal, unfair, unrealistic? Well, what's wrong with it? What's wrong with me leaving your wife alone? What's wrong with me not stealing your lawnmower? What's wrong with me not killing you? Those are three benefits that are pretty good for you, aren't they? What's wrong with you leaving my wife alone? What's wrong with you leaving my lawnmower alone? And what's wrong with you not killing me? That's pretty good for me. So if you take a look here at the law of God, it's not aimed at commerce. It's aimed at ethics or a law that deals with the contact of one human being with another human being. Now, when you look at the Congress enacts laws that deal with trade, commerce, business, and industry that affect the public interest. Congress doesn't care anything about killing. Just test it. Congress doesn't come along with laws that are designed to protect your life, your liberty, or your property. They're designed to protect the insurance company's claims window. The law that says buckle your seatbelt has nothing to do with your life, liberty, or pursuit of happiness. It has to do with the protection of the stream of revenue that comes from taxes paid by insurance companies because they didn't have to pay it out in claims. And the policeman who's out on the street, he's not there to protect your life, liberty, or property. He's there to generate revenue for the state. He's a tax collector. Now, God had your life in mind. He had your life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness in mind that says, thou shalt do no murder. He was interested in protecting your property and property rights when he said, thou shalt not steal. Now, when government comes along and protects your property, they're protecting their tax base. They're not concerned about your property. They're concerned about their tax base. They're concerned about trade, commerce, business, and industry. Politicians are interested in bribes, graft, corruption, money, profit, power. They're not interested in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's time to grow up and get real. Well, he goes on here and he says, yet saith the house of Israel, the way of the eternal is not equal. O house of Israel, are not my ways equal? Are not your ways unequal? Therefore, I will judge you, house of Israel, every one according to his ways, says the eternal. Now repent and turn yourselves from all your transgressions, so iniquity shall not be your ruin. Cast away from you all of your transgressions, whereby you have transgressed, and make you a new heart and a new spirit, for why will you die, O house of Israel? For I have no pleasure in the death of him that dieth, says the Eternal. Wherefore, turn yourselves and live. Now take a look at the world today, boys and girls. It's a pretty serious place. Iraq is a serious place. People are getting killed there every day. Afghanistan is a serious place. And the showdown, the looming showdown with Iran over nuclear weapons, is a serious event. The North Koreans now have the bomb, and their leader over there is insane. You have an insane lunatic with the bomb in North Korea. That's a serious place. You've got a balance of payments deficit approaching $1 trillion a year. That's a serious event. You've got a national debt. You've got a Social Security system that's upside down and a Medicare system that's upside down, and you people are getting old and ready to retire. That's a serious event. The world is filled with serious events, life and death events. The world is a serious place, and it's time to take the world seriously. So here in the scripture, God is telling you the world is a serious place, and it's time for you to take it seriously. This contract is a serious contract, and it's time to take the contract seriously. Now, if you think the United States of America can do a better job of protecting you from the North Koreans and the Iraqis and the insurgency and the Afghanis and the communists, and if you think that communism and the United States of America can give you a better way of life and a more prosperous way of life through Social Security and Medicare and free drugs, well, get after it. But if you're a little concerned about, can the politicians in Washington really pull the fat out of the fire with Social Security and Medicare, balance of payments, and the national debts, or is it out of control? I would contend that it's out of control and that there's a better way of life than Social Security, Medicare, balance of payments deficits, and war in Iraq. Now remember, one of our benefits was, I'll give you peace in the land. We don't have peace in the land. We're under constant terrorist threat. Constant. Hasn't always been that way, but it is now. Now let's go back here to Deuteronomy chapter 28. Deuteronomy 28. I think last time I left off at verse 45 when we took off and took a look at Ezekiel chapter 18. In verse 45, remember, he told us that, moreover, all these curses shall come upon you and shall pursue you and overtake you until you be destroyed. Boys and girls, I contend that destruction is a serious business. Because you hearkened not. Why? Why will you be destroyed? Because you hearkened not unto the voice of the Eternal your God to keep his commandments, his statutes, which he commanded you. Now, you've taken the Ten Commandments out of your public school. Was that a very wise idea? I mean, we used to have the Ten Commandments in our public schools from 1787 to 1946, or 47. And then we started removing them in the process over the past 50 years. Can you see a deterioration in the international geopolitical affairs of the United States of America? We went from a backward third world nation to the world's preeminent industrial, nuclear, political, and military power, economic power, until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. And while we still have that nuclear and that military power, take a look at the insurgency in Iraq. Take a look at what happened to us in Vietnam. With all that military power, General Giap, when asked the question, he was asked, but General Giap, in the entirety of the Vietnam War, you never won a battle. Did you know that? The Americans won every military battle in Vietnam and lost the war. Giap pointed that out. He said, yes, we lost every battle and won the war. Militarily in Iraq, you are winning every battle and losing the war. And that's because your God is not fighting this battle for you. In fact, I think he's working for the other side. When it's all said and done, America will leave Iraq. Just like Mahatma Gandhi told the British, in the end, you Englishmen will walk out of India because it's too costly. It's not profitable. In the end, the Americans left Vietnam because it was not profitable. And in the end, the Americans will leave Iraq because it's not profitable. That's the bottom line. And we're being destroyed in Iraq, and we're being destroyed, or we're destroyed in Vietnam because of our iniquity, because we're in breach of contract. Let me show you that. Over here in Leviticus 26, do you remember that story? Well, General Andrew Jackson, General Jackson, in the Battle of New Orleans, arrived on the scene with 989 guys, about 1,000. The British showed up with about 10,000, and Jackson defeated them. Jackson defeated the British, outnumbered 10 to 1. And in verse 8, 5 of you shall chase 100, 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall before you by the sword. General Jackson had 10 times the military force that he needed to rout the British. Well, when you got God on your team, working on your side, you don't need big military forces. Now today, in Iraq, the military force of the United States is far superior to your opponents, but you can't whip them. Now, why is that? And that's because verse 8 is coming to pass right in front of your eyeballs. Because if you don't obey me and keep my commandments, then your enemies are going to cause you to flee before them seven ways. All right, now in verse 46 here, go back to Deuteronomy 28, verse 46. And they shall be upon you for a sign and a wonder, and upon your seed, that your children forever. Because you served not the Eternal your God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart, for the abundance of all things. I mean, you've got your condominiums, you got your summer home, you got your home in the city, you've got your SUVs, you got a good job, everything's going great for you. But you won't serve God with joyfulness. You go to church every Sunday, 65% of you here in America go to church every Sunday. But you will not perform on this contract. Now that's going to be a killer. Verse 47, he said, because you serve not the Eternal your God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things, therefore shall you serve your enemies, which the Eternal shall send against you in hunger and in thirst and in nakedness and in want of all things, and he shall put a yoke of iron upon your neck until he has destroyed you. Now the Eternal will bring a nation against you from far, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flies, a nation whose tongue you shall not understand. I don't think it's going to be the Germans or the Russians. We understand their speech. It's the Chinese. And besides that, we need an army of 200 million people that's going to fight that last battle, remember, at Megiddo. And I only know of two countries that can field armies like that, and that's a combination, or one or the other, of India or China. I think that's the way that's going to work out. A nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the person of the old, nor show favor to the young. And he shall eat the fruit of your cattle, the fruit of your land, until you be destroyed, which also shall not leave you either corn, wine, or oil, or the increase of your kine, or flocks, or sheep, until he has destroyed you. When they come in, they're going to rape the land, kill one-third of the people in war, one-third of us will die from the famine, and take the other third of us into national captivity. And they'll accomplish the goal that the New World Order has in mind. They're going to depopulate North America, turn it back to the buffalo, which fulfills Bible prophecy, because for seven generations, this land that we call Israel, the land of America, North America, is going to be vacant for seven generations. That's 280 years. 280 years going into the millennium. Then we'll come back and we'll repopulate it again. That's another part of the story for another day. Now, I want you to notice that these prophecies and what you read about today, what you see in the Wall Street Journal and USA Today, is predicted, and it's predicted in Deuteronomy 28 because it's the penal clause to the contract. And the guy that says that he's got the capacity to perform, he's got the capacity to bring the Chinese against you. He's got the capacity to break the pride of your power and to destroy you militarily. Says, I'm going to do that to you. I contend that's serious business. All right, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law and agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the website and the homeschooling page at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and you can access that through our website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest and brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. Just call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the contract penalty clause. Penalty clause in the contract. In case you're tuning in late and you haven't got up to speed yet, and we're talking about the Old Covenant contract located in Exodus 19:16 through Exodus 24:8. There's some penal clause information here located in Leviticus chapter 26 and Deuteronomy chapter 28. And it's my contention that Americans and Britons and Western Europeans in general, the Anglo-Saxons, are in breach of contract. And that's why we're having drought in the West, and we're having balance of payments problems, and we got this war going on in Iraq and can't seem to win it, and we got another war going on in Afghanistan, and then we've got another war looming on the horizon over here in Iran. And then you've got this lunatic in North Korea. Lunatic. And this guy's a nut. And he's got the bomb. A nut with the bomb. And I just can't believe for a minute that the Al-Qaeda boys haven't made a deal with Kim Il-sung for a nuke that they're going to put in a container and then ship it into New York Harbor and detonate it. Or Philadelphia, or Los Angeles, or Long Beach, or someplace else. And boy, if you don't think that's going to stir up a lot of hate and discontent. Now remember, our God told us He'd give us peace in the land. There were certain terms and conditions that we had to adhere to, and we don't do that. Now, Isaiah made an observation. He said, "Cry aloud and spare not, and tell my people their sin." Well, when was the last time you heard a preacher ever get up in church and tell us of our sins? Have you seen that happen? I think it'll be a cold day in hell when you see that happen. Preachers get up in the pulpit and they talk about inane, insane nonsense. I have never heard anything intelligent come out of a preacher's mouth. I don't know if they've got anything intelligent between their ears. If they do, it is so well concealed that I haven't been able to observe it. Just go to church and sit there for an hour and listen to that fool blather on about nonsense and nothing for an hour. Bore you to tears. And then you can get up and sing three songs and sit down and pass the offering plate and pray and do those things, you know, turn around three times and shake bat's knuckles under the full moon or whatever the hell you do in church. But there's nothing intelligent that comes out of that place. And it was a tragedy that these guys pick up the Bible, which is a science and a law book, and they pick up the Bible and they say, "Well, I represent God. And I'm here to tell you about Jesus. And I'm here to tell you about eternal life." I don't think they could find those subjects at high noon with both hands. Jesus himself said, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" And the preachers over here tell you you've got inherited sin, and the Bible tells you you don't. And the preacher says you've got eternal life in your immortal soul, and the Bible tells you you don't. Now, you can believe whoever you want to. You can believe God or you can believe the preacher, but the preacher has a long history of lying. Preachers are paid professional liars, just like advertising men, just like politicians. Advertisers, politicians, and preachers, and lawyers are paid professional liars. That's their business. Now back here in Deuteronomy chapter 28, when we get up here to this captivity story, this nation of fierce countenance in verse 50. In verse 51, he's going to eat your flocks and rape your land. In verse 52, he's going to besiege you and all of your gates until your high and fenced walls come down, wherein you trusted, throughout all the land. And he shall besiege you and all of your gates throughout all of your land, which the Eternal your God has given you. Siege. Siege, that's where you get surrounded and cut off. Surrounded and cut off. Cut off from what? Cut off from all the things that you need to live. Now take a look at the position of the United States of America with this free trade, this global trade crap that's been going on for the last 75 years. Started with our communist president, Franklin D. Roosevelt. We now have free trade. Where does our garlic come from, boys and girls? You remember that story? China. You didn't want to pay $16 a pound for garlic from Gilroy, California. You wanted to pay $4 a pound and buy it from China. remember? And you didn't want to pay to have an automobile built in Detroit. You wanted to buy a Jap car, remember that? And you did. And this is called international free trade. And that's great. That's wonderful. And the Japanese sell us cars cheaper than Chevrolet and General Motors, and Ford can produce cars. And so the Ford company and General Motors has exported their manufacturing facilities to China. They're going to be building Buick automobiles in China, not in Detroit. And that's all right, because now about half of your food that we eat here in the United States, half the food that we consume comes from outside of our borders. That's not, excuse me, that's not good. When this siege comes down, when you can't meet your balance of payments, when you can't pay the Chinese and the Japanese and the Koreans and Filipinos and everybody else for the things that they send to us, they're not going to send them anymore. And that's called an embargo. And when you have this embargo, where you have these high tariffs, and you can't get this stuff, that's the siege that God is talking about here. That's why I always tell my students, you should have a 4-year supply of food. You should have a 4-year supply of everything that you're going to use. Because these sieges, these wars, last for about 4 years. World War II, World War I, Vietnam, Korea. You know, some a little longer, some a little less. But, you know, you better be prepared for about a 4-year siege. Because you're not going to have food, clothing, and shelter. Your shoes. 99% of the shoes sold in America come from outside our borders. Our shoe industry is gone. Our textile industry is gone. You're not producing shirts and pants in the United States. They come from Bangladesh. They come from India. China. And when they shut that off in that siege, did you notice here? He said, you're going to be destroyed. The destruction of the nation. And then military occupation follows that. Military occupation. That's not going to be pleasant. Now, the bright spot for all of this is that if you change, you, just personally, it doesn't require all the people of Ozark County or all the people of Missouri, just you. God told you now in Ezekiel 18, he says, I'll protect you while I punish everybody else. Go back and take a look at Ezekiel 18. Pretty good chapter. You perform on my contract, and I'll perform on my half of the contract. And God's half of the contract is to protect you. It's to give you 70 years of life. You're entitled to 25,550 days. That's 70 years. If you die before you're 70 years old, you've got breach of contract. And if God breaches the contract, you're entitled to 100 times the amount of the liquidated damages. And you'll see that in Mark 10, verses 28 through 30. Jot that down. Mark 10, verse 28 through 30. Three verses. I'll pay you 100 times whatever it is you lose practicing this law. You practice communism and you watch what I do to you. You practice my Ten Commandments and look what I do for you. Verse 53. Now listen to this. You'll eat the fruit of your own body, the flesh of your sons and of your daughters, which the Eternal your God has given you, in the siege and in the straitness wherewith your enemy shall distress you. So that the man that is tender among you and very delicate, his eye shall be evil toward his brother, and toward the wife of his bosom, and toward the remnant of his children which he shall leave. So that he will not give to any of them of the flesh of his children, whom he shall eat, because he has nothing left him in the siege, and in the straitness wherewith thine enemy shall distress thee in all of your gates. The tender and the delicate woman among you, which would not adventure to set the sole of her foot upon the ground for delicateness and tenderness, her eye shall be evil toward the husband of her bosom, and toward the son, and toward her daughter. and toward her young one that comes out from between her feet, and toward her children which she shall bear. For she shall eat them for want of all things, secretly in the siege and the straitness wherewith thine enemy shall distress thee in your gates. If you will not observe to do all of the words of this law that are written in this book, that you may fear the glorious and fearful name, the Eternal your God. Now that's pretty serious, wouldn't you say? That's called cannibalism. Now you just think about how many stories about cannibalism have you heard? There was a guy out in Colorado back in the 1870s, and he got stranded up in the mountains and with a couple of guys, and I don't know if they died or he killed them, but he ate them. That was a very notable case of cannibalism here in the United States. And then, of course, there was the Donners, you know, at Donner Pass, and they got trapped in the winter of 1847 or 48. And they ate some of the carcasses of the dead people there. No indication that they murdered anybody and killed them. And we don't know here in this penal clause chapter of chapter 28 whether or not these people are killing their children. He didn't say that. But when your children starve to death and they're dead and you got this dead body over here and you don't have anything to eat, would you eat your child? Well, evidently God thought you were going to eat your kid. Yeah, evidently he thought so. Think so. This hasn't happened yet. I've never read anywhere in history of cannibalism on the scale that is described here nationwide. The worst case that I've read about or knew about was a 1,000-day siege at Stalingrad during World War II, and the Russians, get this, the Russians, in their seed stock in Stalingrad, they never tapped into their seed stock. They never took their seed that they needed for planting and then distributed that to the people so that they could eat. And in 1,000 days, 3 years, they only had 237 cases of cannibalism recorded. Well, that's what they admitted to. There could have been 2,000, but 237 cases. Now, that was a long siege. 3 years. 1,000 days? It's longer than that. 1,000. Put it into my famous sharp calculator here. Divided by 365 days, that's 2.73 years. 1,000 days. 237 cases. Read this section again. Cannibalism. Nationwide. I would say that that's the outgrowth of nuclear war, a total breakdown in communications and transportation. And remember, 97% of you people are locked up in your cities. You people couldn't perform for yourselves if your lives depended on it. Living in a condominium in Manhattan? I mean, come on, kids. Now, at least those of us that are still out here on the land, that 3% of us that are still out here. Now, remember, God said he was going to give us the land, and we gave him the finger and said, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin, I'm going to Pittsburgh and work in the steel mill. God hired us and said, I want you to work on the land. And we said, no, we're going to be industrial workers in the city. God told us that we would eat our bread by the sweat in our face, and we said, hell no, we won't go. We are going to live and work in the city with concrete under our feet and air conditioning and water coolers where we can pinch the girls' butts. We are not going to work by the sweat on our face. Well, okay. All right. You made your choice, but now there's a conclusion to this. A conclusion. And we're getting down to where the rubber's about to meet the road. Take a look in your USA Today. Take a look in the Wall Street Journal now. Pay attention to what's going on around you. It's a wild new concept. Wake up. pay attention to what's going on around you, and then ask yourself, is this good? Honest to God, do you believe that a lunatic in North Korea with a nuclear weapon is good for America? You believe that? You think that spending, $5 billion a week, is that what we're spending over there in Iraq? My God, do you know what you could buy with $5 billion a week? I mean, you know, you could start paying down your balance of payments, or you could start doing something more intelligent. You might be able to revitalize your auto industry or something like that. I mean, you could put tariffs on or do something over here to save your economy. You might even be able to grow garlic again, or produce shoes or textiles or do something. I don't see anything good in the Wall Street Journal or USA Today. What I see is the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, and that fulfillment of Bible prophecy tells me that we've got a breach of contract that needs to be fixed. Now, most Americans aren't gonna fix that breach of contract. They're not going to hear anything about this. They're not concerned about it, and they don't care about it, and especially religious people. And Americans are religious people. 65% of us go to church every Sunday. By God, that's religious. And those people are not going to practice the Ten Commandments. Those people are not going to post the Ten Commandments on their gates and on their doorposts. And I submit to you that they're going to reap the curses that come down from this breach of contract. Curses, that is, the penal clause in the contract. Now, here with specificity in Deuteronomy 28, here comes the contracting party. And he says, now listen, there's a breach of contract here, and you're going to end up eating your own sons and daughters because of this breach of contract, because I'm going to send a nation from afar whose speech that you don't understand. A wild, fearful people. I mean nasty guys like Genghis Khan. Which, by the way, did you remember where Genghis Khan came from? Huh? And he's going to send that gang against us? And I want you to bear in mind now that the Chinese have the whip hand in economics. Do you know that we owe them about $350 billion? And the Japanese, remember the guys that we whipped in World War II? We owe them about $650 billion. Do you know that we couldn't build an aircraft carrier in the United States of America because we haven't even got a foundry in this country that could cast the damn anchor for one? Not that you need an anchor necessarily, but I'm pointing out that the parts, the heavy industry that we have exported from the United States and sent it all over the world, we depend upon other nations in the world to send us those parts that come from that heavy machinery to build aircraft carriers, for crying out loud. To build airplanes like B-29s or supersonic aircraft. Those parts come from other countries in the world. What do you think is going to happen when our balance of payments goes upside down and we're unable to pay our bills? And those people don't send us those goods. Think about it. He goes on here in verse 59. And he says, I'm going to make your plagues wonderful. Wonderful. You're going to wonder at these plagues and the plagues of your children, your seed, even great plagues and of long continuance and sore sickness and of long continuance. Doesn't that sound like cancer, heart disease, and Alzheimer's disease, Lou Gehrig's disease? Diseases of long continuance. A hard way to die. My granddad, my great-granddad, Abe Snyder, went to bed at 10:30 one night and he didn't come down for breakfast at 7:30. So they went upstairs and checked in on him, found that there he was, laying in bed, dead. Died in his sleep. And the obituary said he died peacefully in his sleep. That's the way I want to go. I want to die peacefully in my sleep with my shoes off in bed. I don't know anything about it. I'll go to bed at 10:30 and don't wake up. Boys and girls, have you thought about this Lou Gehrig's disease where you die slowly over a long period of time because you lose control of your muscles until finally you're asphyxiated. You can't breathe anymore. Your brain is working. You're like Superman. Remember Chris Reeve? He was paralyzed from the neck down. Now, that was an accident, but you know, when you get Alzheimer's disease or Lou Gehrig's disease, your brain deteriorates. Or, worse, your brain doesn't deteriorate, but your body does. And that's a disease of long continuance. Now, is that what we're seeing here in the United States? And did you notice, 50 years ago, I never heard the word Alzheimer's. I didn't know what the hell it was. Well, we heard of Lou Gehrig's disease, because Lou Gehrig got it. Boy, that was rare. It's not rare anymore. It's very common. Alzheimer's disease, Lou Gehrig's disease, muscular dystrophy, Parkinson's disease. I mean, these are common ailments. It goes on. Cancer, heart attack, stroke, very common. Diseases of long continuance. Verse 60, moreover, he will bring upon you all the diseases of Egypt which you were afraid of, and they shall cleave unto you, and also every sickness and every plague which is not written in the book of this law, them will the Eternal bring upon you until you be destroyed. The biggest industry in the United States is medicine. $1.6 trillion a year. 16% of the gross domestic product, medicine, sickness, disease. 16% of every dollar that you earn and spend goes to medicine. Goes to your doctor. The hell do you want to spend 16% of your livelihood on some quack called a doctor for? What's that got to do with life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? How does that help you buy a new boat and a jet ski? That's a drag on the economy. That's a drag on you. It's a drag on everybody. That doesn't produce anything intelligent. Except for my Aunt Floy. She was a hypochondriac, old Aunt Floy was. And she liked to talk about all of her sicknesses and her ailments. And whenever you went over to Aunt Floy's, she'd tell you about her ailments that the doctors couldn't diagnose and couldn't figure out what's wrong with her and didn't know what they were going to do. She had the doctor stumped. God, she just loved it. If she wasn't sick, she wouldn't have anything to talk about. She lived for her sickness. She lived for disease. Loved it. I'm sure she loved every minute of it. I never could see any profit in it or any value in being sick for the rest of my life. I don't see any value or any profit in Lou Gehrig's disease or Alzheimer's disease. And I don't see any fun, pleasure, or excitement in dying that way either. And yet that's the penal clause to the contract. Now I say that's serious. We're getting down to serious business over here. I don't think that this God is anybody to start giving the finger to. This is anything. This is the guy to say, hey boss, I think I screwed up. Time for me to shape up or ship out. Straighten up and then fly right. I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right here and remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and good night, friends.